Virginia has its draw for the NCAA tournament. How far can the Cavaliers go? We'll talk about that and recap all the news out of Greensboro from last week's ACC tournament, this week on Teal and Barton. Welcome to episode 107 of Teal and Barber, the Richmond Times-Dispatch and Richmond.com's Virginia Tech, UVA, and ACC sports podcast. I'm Mike Barber, ACC beat writer for the paper, and joining me as always, my co-host, the 14-time sports writer of the year, the Virginia Sports Hall of Famer, the Skeeter Francis Award winner. Anything I'm leaving out, David? Mr. David Teal.
Mike, happy March Madness. And I am just thrilled to be finally covering a game where one of the jerseys just on it says simply DINS, D-I-N-S.
How about that? I wonder if we're, I bet in the parking lot if we try, we can acquire like a knockoff black market version so we can, maybe we'll reshoot the photo for the podcast wearing DINS. I'm sure Virginia fans would love that. But yes, you referenced the Furman Paladins. Most of my exposure to Furman had been back covering 1AA football, but yeah, they've really got something rolling there. It's going to be an interesting matchup. Certainly, we're going to get into that. We're going to get into the entire NCAA tournament bracket. We're going to get into selection, who got in, who got out. A lot of stuff to cover today. David, though, those brackets in your house, Jill, Laura, and your wife and daughter, they were there in Greensboro to take in some games and to see you receive that Skeeter Francis Award. I thought that was really special. Does everybody get their own bracket in your house, and how competitive is it?
Yes, and very. I mean, Jill keeps past brackets in a file. I mean, we're keeping score.
So who's the leader? Who's the best at this? And I know only one person in the house does it for a living, but that doesn't always translate to bracket success.
I don't know. It rarely translates yeah. to bracket success, Mike. Jill is the family prognosticator.
But now, does she get her bracket in other places? Does she do more than one? Is she a purist and there's only one bracket you can really believe in?
I believe she usually just does one, but she enters it in several places. She runs the office pool.
There you go. So there's some passion. I love to do the brackets. Elizabeth does. The kids, we're trying to get them a little more interested. But for my prowess in filling out the brackets, I was once defeated by my dog. We let the dog pick the bracket. He did it randomly. We'd put the two treats out. Whichever one he went for, that was the team. So zero basketball involved, and he had a much better bracket that year than I did. So that's not my retirement plan. It is not to win any of these office pools. But it's certainly going to be interesting. It's certainly going to be fun. It was interesting and fun this past week, David, in Greensboro. I think probably you, like I, we went down there and not exactly sure what we were going to get from Virginia. Certainly that may be enhanced when we found out that Ben Vanderplas, a starting forward, the graduate transfer from Ohio, had suffered a fractured hand in practice on Wednesday, David, the day before, right before yeah. they left for the trip, the day before they played. But Virginia made a very strong showing. A couple of wins, beat North Carolina, beat Clemson convincingly, and then struggled with Duke in the title game, losing there. Overall, what was your takeaway from Virginia's time in Greensboro?
Well, number one, starting forward and sixth man runner-up in ACC voting, it's so peculiar. We consider Vanderplas a starter, and he has been for the second half of the season, yet he finished second in sixth man of the year voting in the all-ACC balloting. But Virginia arguably cost two ACC teams an NCAA tournament bid, costing North Carolina and Clemson, both among the first four teams out. So the Cavaliers, those are two impressive wins in my mind, especially given the Vanderplas injury. And then losing to Duke Saturday night, to me, that was fairly predictable. Duke is playing the best basketball in the conference, has been for some time now. And after what transpired in Charlottesville in February, you know the Blue Devils were itching for a rematch.
It was funny. I think looking at the draw, looking at the bracket in Greensboro, My thought was, I thought Carolina was a toss-up. I wasn't sure which way that would go. I thought there was no chance Virginia was going to lose to Clemson. And then I thought there was no chance they were going to beat Duke. I thought it was a fairly predictable situation there for Virginia. But like you said, a couple of impressive wins. And you know what stood out to me, David, was this team, we all fell in love with this team early in the year when they were just spreading the floor and raining down threes on people, getting back up court and shutting people down at the defensive end. The three-point shot has since virtually abandoned them. That is not something they can rely on in any measure. But they found a new way to score, and they found it in the paint. They found it driving to the rim with Armon Franklin, with Reese Beekman. Certainly, Kihei Clark at times has been a big part of that. So it really is a team, throw in the Vanderplas injury, that has kind of reformed and reshaped itself a few times during the year. I don't think that should be overlooked. This has been a little bit of an amoeba of a team, and it just finds ways to survive and survive in advance, as they say this time of year, right? What do you think of the way they are playing right now?
I think it's okay. I don't think it's great, but Jaden Gardner in the mid-range, as he was for much of last season, has become, I would say, their most consistent offensive weapon. And their defense just isn't quite consistent enough. There are nights when they lock in and wow, are they good. But other nights, maybe it's a half or maybe there's a prolonged lapse and it costs them. But yeah, all in all, probably worthy of a top 16 seed. And that's exactly what they got in the tournament. They're a number four there in the South region.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because of the offensive issues, which is not a new storyline in Charlottesville, that they're at their best offensively when that defense is sparking them, right? When Beekman mm-hmm. can get a steal. And, you know, people will sometimes look at the numbers and they'll say, well, it was 10 fast break points or 12 fast break points. That doesn't seem like a big deal. This is a team that routinely is playing games in the 50s and 60s. So 10 or 12 points that you can essentially steal, with your defense, with steals, that's a huge impact. And that's the thing that I thought was really sharp early in the ACC tournament, maybe not so much against Duke, the ability to just go get some easy ones that way. And then the concerning thing for me offensively is they have reinvented things. They are getting to the rim more, settling for the outside shot less. But they've had a few games this year, and Duke was one of them, David, where they get to the rack, and then they don't finish there. And I'm not talking about Derek Lively 7 feet tall and he's blocking you. I'm talking about you get to the rim pretty clean and the ball rolls off. And we saw Caden Shedrick miss a dunk. We saw Kihei Clark miss a layup. We saw Armon Franklin put a layup that seemed like it sat on the rim and then fall off. This team with this offense cannot afford that.
No, few offenses can. And especially this one, I think Greg Medea asked Caden after the Duke game the other night, what does Virginia need to do better moving forward to have a successful NCAA tournament? And Shedrick, very self-deprecating, says, well, it pretty much starts with me not missing dunks.
You know, it's funny, but he was very hard on himself after that Duke game. And that dunk certainly was one of the more memorable. But it's team-wide missing those, you know, we call them bunnies. And, you know, this offense works too hard to get a shot to then not do the last part, right, to fall apart at the rim. It'll be interesting. I think, you know, again, and I've got this bias because of how well they played out in Vegas. If by some magic, some March elf, they find that 3-point stroke again.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's just a different team. It's just hard to imagine that coming back, at least the way, I mean, David, they were hitting 13, 14 threes in a game coming out of the gate this season.
Well, and Vanderplas was a part of that.
Huge part of that. Huge part. He was 6 of 10 his first three games shooting threes at UVA, which, again, those numbers don't sound huge, but this is a low possession team. And, you know, knocking down a couple three-pointers every game is a huge impact. And remember, like you mentioned, at that point he was coming off the bench. In their last, I think it's their last 12 games, the most they've hit is 7, and they've only done that once. So the three-point shot right now is not part of their offense. Hitting layups has been a struggle. Hitting free throws has been a struggle. And the defense, as you mentioned, you know, when it's good, it's very, very good, but not there as consistently as they need. It's one of the more puzzling for me UVA teams heading into an NCAA tournament, where I think the upside is so incredibly high, and I think the downside is go home after one game. And obviously, any UVA team, as we've learned, can do that and be that. But I think this one is really hard to predict for me, anyway.
Yeah, I would agree. And Mike, I'll tell you what, the folks at The Athletic have this computer model based on heaven knows how many mathematical formulas, and they call it Slingshot. And they ran the numbers, and the most likely first round upset, Furman over Virginia, 39.3%.
Yeah, it doesn't surprise me. You know, we saw that with Ben Vanderplas's Ohio team in the same 4-13 matchup. It will be fascinating. So let's get into a little bit here of selection, of the draw, of the bracket. Virginia, you mentioned they're a 4 seed. They're paired with Furman, Southern Conference champion, 27-7. I believe the Paladins have won their last 6 games. This is a game that's going to be played in Orlando, Florida. A lot of people thought maybe they were heading back to Greensboro for another week, but we're going to take in some warm weather and head down south. David, what do you make of where they are? They're the 4 in the South. They've got a number 1 there in Alabama that, if they get that far, sets up this amazing battle of good and evil, if you will, with where those programs are and what they've been involved in. But some other pitfalls along the way, certainly before that, too. Arizona's the 2 in that region. Baylor is the 3. Virginia, as we mentioned, the 4. If the seeds hold, they would advance to play San Diego State. They play Charleston in the first round, also in Orlando. So what do you make of the South and of Virginia's path?
Well, I don't know that it's more daunting than in any other region. In fact, it may be less daunting. I know Alabama is the overall number 1 seed and just won the SEC tournament and doesn't appear to be fazed by all the noise around the program, but it's going to get even worse in the tournament. And I wonder if at some point the accumulation of it does affect them. It would only be human if it did. But, you know, the Tide is supremely talented, and Brandon Miller, the young man whose actions on that terrible night have been parsed by so many, he is, you know, a top 3, top 5 NBA pick whenever he so chooses, which is probably in a couple of weeks when he'll declare, and he's the nation's top freshman and he'll be a first team All-American. So Alabama is loaded. I don't think Virginia would beat Alabama, but hey, Carolina took Alabama to how many overtimes out in Vegas? Or no, it was in Portland, I think, where they were playing. I think they played 4 overtimes, and Alabama won that game. And at that stage of the season, everybody, what's wrong with Carolina? And then you look back on it and say, hey, they took number 1 team in the country to 4 overtimes, maybe one of their best performances of the season. I think it, for Virginia this year, this team, given where it is, to survive the first weekend, anything else after that would be gravy. It would be to get to the Sweet 16. That would be a serious accomplishment for this group.
Yeah, you know, I'm inclined to agree, although if they didn't have Alabama looming, I think this is a team that, as like I said, it gets more comfortable with Vanderplas being out. Maybe it finds a little bit of its stroke. This was a team that I think could advance, you know, to the Elite Eight, could get that far. I just, that Alabama roadblock to me looks insurmountable. But as you mentioned, they may not even get to that point. So I wouldn't fret too much over the Crimson Tide just yet. You mentioned North Carolina. So before we go any further, let's look at the selection. 5 ACC teams make it. Pittsburgh playing in the first 4, Then you look at North Carolina and Clemson, both left out. I think both fair, right? When you look at both of those teams' resumes, it isn't hard to say, like, okay, I see why they're on the bubble. And once you're on the bubble, it may burst for you. Clemson in particular, I thought, had a real strong case to be in. I thought they would make it. Then again, I thought Rutgers, my alma mater, would be there too. That's a topic for a different show. What did you think of the five from the ACC and who got left out?
Well, the top seeds in the NIT, which means you're among that you were the first or the last four excluded from the NCAA, were North Carolina, which declined the NIT, but Oklahoma State, Rutgers, and Clemson. Clemson, to me, has a serious, serious case because of the inclusion of NC State. And this is nothing against the Wolfpack. I think the Wolfpack should be in the tournament. If I were doing the committee, Nevada would not be in the tournament, and Clemson would be. Mike, at some point, what happens on the court head-to-head has to matter. I know Clemson lost to Louisville. I know Clemson lost to Loyola of Chicago. But Clemson finished two games ahead of NC State in the ACC standings. Oh, you might say, well, maybe their schedules were in balance. Yes, they were. But Clemson and NC State played not once, not twice. They played three daggone times, and Clemson beat them like a drum all three times, including in the ACC tournament. You're just not paying attention, and that's your job to when you're on that committee.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because you can see the thought process, right? NC State in, okay, then you get to Clemson, and you're not comparing them at that moment to NC State, right?
Correct.
You're comparing them to the other bubble teams. But that should tell you that maybe Clemson is less of a bubble team when they've got those three head-to-head wins over a team that you've already put comfortably in. Now, mm-hmm. you know, you referenced the Louisville loss, and that's a thing for any of these teams, right? And again, I don't want to go down the Rutgers path, but they lost to Minnesota late in the year. Mm-hmm. Clemson loses to Louisville. So does it mean that they're not good teams, that they can't advance in March, that they shouldn't be there? No. But can you point the finger back at yourself there for a moment and say, okay, if we took care of business, we're not having this conversation? And you know, that's always the committee's answer, right? Like, hey, if you don't trust our decision, don't leave it in our hands. And all of these teams, and any year we talk bubble, that is their sin, is that they have left it in the hands of the committee. But I'm inclined to agree with you that Clemson, certainly over Nevada, I thought Clemson deserved to be in this field. And I was a little surprised they weren't. I knew they weren't when I saw Pitt in the first four, because that kind of meant, okay, that was where the line was drawn. And what a precipitous fall for Pitt, who was in the regular season finale playing for the one seed in the ACC tournament and the league title.
And lost that game by 2 points on the road at Miami.
Yeah. And now
you're in the first four. You're literally among the last four teams in the field.
And I would be inclined to tell you that is my, once we move past who's in, who's out, I think that's my biggest seeding gripe. I thought Texas A&M is woefully underseeded, but I think
absolutely
Buzz Williams probably earned that with his reaction last year. I'm guessing that the committee remembered that and wasn't going to do him any favors. That's a terrible first-round matchup for A&M to be playing Penn State. Terrible for both of them because both of those teams ended the year hot. And it feels like in punishing Buzz Williams, the committee has punished Penn State and Micah Shrewsbury as well.
By the way, the same Penn State team that Clemson beat.
Right. So Clemson should be in. Clemson should be in. A&M should be seated higher. Rutgers, I wish. I just don't see a spot for them. So it is what it is, as they say. So overall, now it's up to these five teams to, not to make it sound like the ACC is some maiden virgin back in the tower there, but to defend the honor of the ACC to advance. When you look at the bracket, when you look at the draws, what do you think of the ACC team's chances? Who do you like best? Who do you think is the best candidate to go home early?
Well, the team I like best is just simply the team that is playing best, and that's Duke. I mean, it's hard not to like what they are doing right now. Nine straight wins, just is as good as Virginia is defensively and can be, I think Duke's a little better just because they're so athletic and they are so long at every position. And we saw it in the first half Saturday night, Mike. I mean, Virginia scored 17 points. That ties for the fewest ever in the first half of an ACC championship game. As Shedrick said in the locker room, their defense is for real. And he is 100% accurate in that. And all that said, you know, it's not like Duke has an easy path because, number one, they're only a 5 seed. And who do they draw in the first round? Oral Roberts out of the Summit, which has the nation's longest winning streak at 17 games. And, you know, and then in the second round, and they'll be in Orlando, by the way, with us. And then a second round, you could have Duke, Tennessee.
Yeah. And the one that is circled for me, Purdue with Zach Edey, just a matchup nightmare for anybody. But if there's a team in the country that can match up with him, I kind of thought Duke with their 2 7-footers, with Lively coming on. You're going to have to play a high seed probably at some point. You don't want to play them in that Sweet 16 round. That's rough. I like the Duke-Purdue matchup. I don't know if they win it, but I think Purdue, if you're Purdue, that is the 4 or 5 seed you least want to see. And that's who you get in your region and may see if Duke beats Tennessee. Again, long way to go. Tennessee is very good as well. But yeah, I'm inclined to agree with you. Now, do you have Virginia as the most likely to fall early?
Probably, yes. I think so. Although, you know, Miami has a tough draw. Miami's a 5 and, you know, the dreaded 5-12. And they get Missouri Valley champion Drake in the first round, then a potential second round game against Trace Jackson Davis and Indiana. That's a very difficult draw, I think, for the Hurricanes. You know, as good as that backcourt is. And oh, by the way, I have not seen any updates, and I know Jim Larrañaga had a presser last night, and I haven't had time to catch up on it yet. What is Norshadow Mears' status?
Yeah, that's going to be big, and it certainly didn't look good sitting there courtside, but who knows? Hopefully there's a chance he plays, but it does seem, at least from where we were sitting, right, seemed like a long shot to think that he could be back that quickly. I've got Pittsburgh as my most likely to be bounced. I think they could lose that first 4 game to Mississippi State, and I certainly think they would match up with who then? Iowa State. I think that, to me, Pittsburgh, the committee did them no favors. I don't think they should be in the first 4, but they're there. I think it's going to be really hard for them to win both of those games in short order. So I think the Panthers will be the first one done. And I agree with you about Duke. You know, I think that is the team, if you're the ACC this year, that you're hanging your hat on. Again, Virginia can certainly make a run. I don't like the Alabama roadblock. Miami, the way they've played, I think they can get on fire offensively. They're a really tough matchup. I think NC State is a really, really hard matchup because of Burns inside and their tremendous backcourt. Who am I leaving out here from the ACC?
No, you covered them.
So I think that's a pretty good. I think that's a pretty good shot that they can get 2 of those teams through, maybe 3. I'm talking to the Sweet 16.
To the second weekend.
Yeah, I think if you get 3 of your 5, you feel pretty good.
Yeah, that's what happened last year.
Right. Then the question is, what is the ceiling on some of those teams? And again, you never know, but I think there are some roadblocks looming for all of those teams that will make it hard to repeat what the ACC did a year ago,
which was 2 Final Four teams at Duke and Carolina and Miami in the Elite Eight.
Yeah, I mean, that was just an outstanding year. David, because you've had the chance to be around them a little, I only covered one of their games, but VCU, I thought they were fighting their way to being an at-large selection if they lost in the title game. They wisely did not let it come down to that and won the A-10 conference tournament, won the automatic bid. They start with an interesting one. They're a 12 seed in a 5-12 game against St. Mary's. They're up in Albany. Potential matchup with UConn or maybe Rick Pitino's Iona team next. What do you think of VCU, the way they're playing, the way they'll match up, and their path?
Well, as a 12 seed, it's clear that had VCU lost yesterday to Dayton, the Rams would have been staying home. So they had to win. And they did, and they were down 11 early in the second half, Mike, after which they put on a clinic, shot like 55-6 in the second half, and pressured Dayton into missing 19 of its last 20 shots. I mean, the Rams were on point in a large way yesterday. And as usual, it was Ace Baldwin leading the way. There's a reason he's not only the A-10 overall player of the year, he's the league's defensive player of the year. And it's so cool for that program that after the 2021 bubble tournament in Indianapolis, where everybody was on eggshells with every COVID test, only one team got excused because of the virus. And that was VCU just hours before its first round game against Oregon. So to see that bunch get back in the tournament and to be able to play, and got, you know, Baldwin and Jameer Watkins were on that team, and now they're such essential pieces of this squad, just feel really good for them and Mike Rhodes and his staff.
No doubt. Now, in the intro, we talked a little bit about brackets. David, have you spent enough time to tell us who you've got in the Final Four, or do we need to maybe come back and have a special episode before we get that far into things?
I really haven't picked it, Mike. If you were forcing me at gunpoint to just look at my bracket,
which I would never do. I would never do that to you.
Well, I would pick Duke to make the Final Four, and perhaps foolishly so, because as I told you the other day in Greensboro, of the ACC 17 Final Four teams since the year 2000, only four of them made or won the conference tournament. So those conference tournaments are not necessarily predictive. In the South, I would take Arizona and the Wildcats are a two seed. Give me in the Midwest. I'm very leery on Houston because of Marcus Sasser's status. I don't know what his injury status is. I know the Cougars got waxed pretty good by Memphis yesterday. So let's just go with Rodney Terry sewing up that job full time with Texas. And then let's go Rock Chalk out West.
You and I, as of right now, would be very similar. I had Arizona, Duke. I like Xavier. I like Xavier in the Midwest. I agree with you that Houston is the shakiest of the ones. And, you know, it's an interesting bracket because you've got Texas, who's playing so well. You've got Texas A&M and Buzz Williams, who's playing so well. So now Houston, Texas, Texas A&M, but I'm going out of the Lone Star State there. I think Xavier, if you're looking for a team that isn't a one or a two, not that they're far off there as a three seed, I like Xavier there. And then I too like Kansas in the bottom in the West there. So
Mike, how about that potential second round game between the Aggies and the Horns?
Yeah, that's, again, I understand punishing Buzz Williams. There's no way that's a second round.
It's beautiful. Oh, Texas A&M, you can't make that up. And oh, by the way, you know, spare me the conspiracy theories. The committee doesn't have time to project potential second round matchups, but it's all done once they seed the field. Then they throw it into the computer that understands the bracketing principles and the venues, and the computer is the one that spits out the bracket. And, you know, you mentioned Houston, you know, in your mind and in mine as well, kind of being a shaky number one because of Sasser's injury. Houston could find himself in the second round in Birmingham playing Auburn.
Yeah.
That doesn't feel quite right.
The computer did not do them any favors. And, you know, we mentioned the idea that, you know, Duke might have been sent back to Greensboro, and that would have certainly maybe tipped things there. And that Tennessee-Duke was a popular pairing. And I remember people saying, like, boy, if you're Tennessee, you're not going to love that. Obviously, it's not the way it shook out. David, there were a few storylines that I was rooting for in this that we didn't get, although I suppose Virginia against Ryan Odom is still out there. it seems unlikely. It would require both of those teams to advance a little bit deeper than I think we have them. But
you mean the Elite Eight?
Yes, I don't know that, but that was where it would happen. I was thinking that would be a very cool first round matchup. Again, the computer doesn't have the same sense of humor that we do. So Virginia Ryan Odom didn't mean anything to the computer. Armon Franklin and a possible second round matchup with Indiana was one I was rooting for. We didn't get that. I was hoping to have VCU or even Buzz Williams and Texas A&M at one of our sites. Anything that you were particularly hoping for, or anything that as you look at the bracket, you think, oh, that's juicy?
Well, when we talked about the East and we both ended up picking Duke, and that's a fine pick, beware of Shaka Smart, because that group is playing superb basketball, Big East regular season and tournament champions. And we know from Shaka's time at VCU that he can coach in the postseason. It would have been fun to be around him and his club at one of our sites. So I'm kind of disappointed there. I'm rooting for VCU to win too for one reason. Vegas, baby, because that's where the Rams would go for the Sweet 16, where by the way, they could very well be reunited with Kansas, which is whom VCU beat in the Elite Eight to reach the Final Four back in 2011 in San Antonio.
Yeah, no, that was, I'm Vegas'd out after going earlier in the year, but that certainly would be an intriguing matchup if they can get that far. And I think it's going to be a fun. It always is a fun tournament. It's my favorite sporting event, which I always feel a little bit cheap picking it as my favorite sporting event because it's so long and so massive. It sort of feels like, okay, I'm comparing the NCAA tournament to the Super Bowl. Maybe I should be comparing the NCAA tournament to all of the NFL playoffs, right? Or sure, all of the Stanley Cup playoffs. But for whatever reason, we think of, you know, March Madness and the NCAA tournament as a single entity, and it is my favorite single entity in all of sports.
Couldn't agree more. And the playoffs, I mean, those are prolonged, and the same with the NCAA bowl season, and you had that long lag between the end of the post or the regular season and then getting to the postseason. You know, the NBA and NHL playoffs are a season unto themselves.
Yeah, no doubt. There's a flow you get into, right? Yeah. With the NCAA tournament, it's just a lot of fun. And it's, you know, I mean, some of the players we're talking about, you know, teacher kind of rolling the TV in for whether it was the ACC tournament final or the NCAA. I remember the NCAA first two rounds and my English teacher basically giving us extra assignment. And if we came in and everybody had their stuff done, we rolled in the TV and we watched basketball.
That's right.
And it was, yeah, and it was a great motivational tactic because everybody had their work done. Because let's face it, the kids who didn't care so much about the NCAA tournament, most of them were getting their work done anyway. And a lot of the people who were going to skip class to watch basketball, they were the ones who needed the little kick in the butt. So it worked out well, and we got to watch our more than our share of basketball during the school day there at Park Ridge High School. David, there was a lot of other goings-on in Greensboro off the court. And it started from the moment I walked into the building. I walked in to Jim Boeheim's final ACC tournament, what turned out, press conference, which was a bizarre affair in which he intimated that he had told everyone he was retiring in a speech at the end of the regular season and nobody had picked up on it, and then was very vague when asked directly if he was retiring and said it's not up to him. And then shortly thereafter, there was a release from Syracuse, and they followed that up with a very nice, I thought, press conference where Jim got a more appropriate send-off. He talked about what it's meant to him to really spend his entire adult life.
His entire life. He's from there. I mean,
it's
the man is truly not hyperbole. He is a Syracuse lifer, and he has no intention of leaving.
Yeah, I mean, that's what he said. Was, you know, from his playing days to his grad assistant days to his assistant to his coaching days. He has no intention of leaving. And good for him to find somewhere he's comfortable. Good for him to have just an amazing David career. And I think we get sidetracked because he is surly and he is difficult to deal with. And, you know, the way he went out was just bizarre. And, you know, being asked three or four times directly, you know, are you retiring? And the weird answers of, well, you're asking the wrong guy. And but put that all to the side for a minute. Jim Boeheim is an all-time great.
Yes. There's a reason he's in the Hall of Fame. He went to 35 NCAA tournaments in 47 seasons as Syracuse's coach. I believe he went to 5 Final Fours. He won the national championship. Now, he was part of what made the Big East great. You know, him and Big John and Rolly and Louis Carnesecca, that is what just mushroomed the Big East into what at the time, you know, was the premier basketball conference in America. And famously in 1985 sent 3 teams to the Final Four.
There's no doubt, and no doubt of his kind of worthiness of praise. And again, you know, the personality is what it is. And I've probably told the story before, but the very first time I met him, I was a freshman in college. And I was at Big East Basketball Media Day at the Marriott Marquis there in New York City. And kind of feeling my way through, first time being there. And we had this buffet line for lunch. And it was a merge, like you get on the highway, right? When the lanes closed and 2 lanes were kind of merging. And I was passively waiting, and I kind of kept letting people step and go and go. Finally, I said, you know, I need to, just like driving, I said, I just need to go. I need to step out there and get my spot. And I stepped out, and I hear behind me a voice say, how many games do I have to win before I won't get cut in the lunch line by some college kid? And I turn around, and it's Jim Bay. Which I thought was a good introduction. And then later that afternoon, I saw him, you know, I had questions for him, and I couldn't tell if he kind of remembered, hey, that's the kid that cut me in the lunch line. But he gave me good answers, you know, and I think, you know, everybody gets caught up in how he treats media and often student media. And certainly he's rough at times. He's unnecessarily surly. Sometimes I think his sense of humor is lost on people. I don't know. I always found him fun to kind of cover on the outside. Probably a little bit different if you're Mike Waters or one of the people up there. And
Donatota, absolutely.
You got to deal with that every day. But for me, he was a personality in addition to an all-time great.
Oh, yeah. He absolutely was. And let's acknowledge whom Syracuse immediately promoted to replace Jim Boeheim. And that's Adrian Red Autry. Who is a former Seth Greenberg assistant at Virginia Tech, started there as a director of basketball operations before Seth promoted him to an assistant coach. He ended up leaving the Tech program and returning to his alma mater, where he has spent, I believe, the last decade, maybe 11 years, under Jim Boeheim. And Mike, to me, it is so striking that now the ACC, and in my mind, and this is no offense to, I know some Virginia fans got bent out of shape when I wrote this. This is no offense to Virginia and Tony Bennett. But historically, the leading basketball brands that now reside in the ACC are Duke, Carolina, Syracuse, and Louisville. There's just, when you look at the number of NCAA tournament appearances, national championships, Final Four, there's just, Virginia's not quite in that class when it comes to all time. But those 4 programs now are led by guys who had never been college head coaches before. They played at those institutions. And, you know, Mike Krzyzewski, a couple coaches removed, Rick Pitino, Jim Boeheim, Roy Williams, all gone, replaced by John Shire, Hubert Davis, Kenny Payne, and now Red Autry. It is a fascinating transition for ACC basketball at a time where the league at 15 members in back-to-back years has only gotten 5 NCAA tournament bids.
It's a really good point. I'm sorry that our Virginia listeners only heard Louisville is better than Virginia, and then everything went red for them, because right. It's a very good point and a really interesting storyline. And you know, what is going to happen with those blue blood type programs? And then what is going to happen at a place like Florida State or a place like Miami, mm-hmm. when Leonard Hamilton and Jim Larrañaga, though they're certainly giving a good run at it, are not going to coach forever. And those aren't the brands, right? So maybe Duke handing things over to John Shire is in, not maybe, definitely, is in a better position to sustain than Miami. And, you know, Miami's program feels like it's what Jim Larrañaga has done. Florida State's success feels like it's what Leonard Hamilton has done. You look at some of those other programs and you think, okay, Mike Krzyzewski, Roy Williams, Dean Smith, Jim Boeheim, Rick Pitino, what they did feels like it had more staying power. Mm-hmm. And part of that is the brand. So it's going to be very interesting to see, you know, this perception of the ACC not being as good as it once was. Are those brands going to elevate and bring everybody, the rising tide lifts all ships? And what's going to happen to some of these other programs that, and that might not be it for coaching changes, but what's going to happen to some of these other programs as we go? Well, we talked about Jim Boeheim not always being the most media friendly. One of the coaches that is gone, it probably is the king of media friendly. Josh Pastner at Georgia Tech also had that great run to the ACC title a couple of years ago.
COVID year.
So, you know, had some success, unable to sustain it, certainly was hurt by some kind of late defections a year ago to the NBA draft, never seemed to completely get that thing right. Talked all year about how his team put things together a month behind schedule. They did play well over the final month of the season, but Josh Pastner was relieved of his duties at Georgia Tech. David, what did you think of that decision? What do you think of the job Josh did? And what do you think's next for the Yellow Jackets?
Well, Georgia Tech under Josh Pastner did something that no one had done at Georgia Tech since Bobby Cremins, and that's have back-to-back winning ACC seasons. It had been decades since Georgia Tech had done that, and Pastner did it. The first year he did it, there was no NCAA tournament, so you feel badly for him there. The next year there was the COVID tournament, and the Jackets ended up losing in the first round of the NCAA after having won the ACC in Greensboro. But you mentioned, he was kind of surprised when he lost the core of that 2021 team, especially, you know, Jose Alvarado. You know, if he could have retained him for another year, we might not be having this conversation. It's much the same as to what happened to Wake Forest when Chris Paul bailed earlier than Skip Prosser thought he was going to, and it really set the program back a couple of years. But Jay Blatt, the new athletic director at Georgia Tech, you know, that's always a recipe for regime change. When a new AD essentially comes in during the season, you know, Blatt replaced the former football player Todd Stansberry, who was the AD there, and you just the writing was on the wall. It was a business decision, one NCAA appearance in seven seasons, and it just wasn't going to work. As for what's next, Jeff Goodman, who was very plugged into the national scene and does podcasts and things for Stadium.com. He floated a curious name to me, the name is curious to me, but he floated it on Twitter today. Damon Stoudamire, who is a Boston Celtics assistant, has Atlanta ties, former head coach at the University of Pacific, former great Arizona guard, lefty. Folks will remember his name or his game. That he has emerged as a strong candidate at Georgia Tech. And I kind of thought to myself, wow, you know, that might bring a little juice to the program.
No doubt. The other name that I had seen floated out there was Ryan Odom, who we hit on earlier. Certainly has a connection there, a family connection to the ACC.
Oh, my gosh.
I think he would be a good fit. You know, Georgia Tech is interesting to me. It does have some history. It is in a great spot. Right, being in a city, being in Atlanta, it feels like, and I feel like we've said this with their football program too, it feels like a good job. It feels like a little bit of that sleeping giant. But I mean, I see Josh Pastner not working there, and somebody who just loved being in the ACC, worshiped the conference, and you know, it's the classic question. I'm like, but if he can't do it, who can do it? You know, yeah.
Mike, you know what Georgia Tech doesn't have?
What's that?
NIL money.
Yeah.
It doesn't.
Right, but it's not going to get it with a new coach.
Right.
And that's kind of my point is
that's what makes it maybe not a great job and a damn hard job.
Yeah, I agree. And it's why I question the decision to move away from Pastner, because Rick Pitino's not going there, yeah. Right? Hubert Davis
isn't going to St. John's, though, right?
Right. Hubert Davis isn't leaving Carolina to go to Georgia Tech. You're not in that market of coaches. So you've got a guy who's proved he can win there. You've got a guy who wants to be there. It's a risky play to me. I think that the answer is kind of what they did with Josh, is take a younger coach who's got that energy and see what he can do. And you know, you mentioned Alvarado leaving, and maybe if they hold that roster together, things are different and they build something sustainable. But it'll be very interesting to me what direction they go. I do think Odom is a name to keep an eye on. Again, in part because of his ties. That's not the only basketball that we're going to have. It's going to be the basketball we're most focused on. But there's the NIT. Virginia Tech is going to play there. David, you wrote after the ACC tournament about the fact that will be good for them.
Yes.
That experience, they got a lot of young players. Conversely, North Carolina announced as soon as the NCAA bracket came out that they were not going to go to the NIT. They would pass on any invitation. That's an older team, although they've got young guys who would have benefited. Virginia Tech, younger team, they're going. What do you make of what the Hokies can get out of this experience?
Well, Mike, Rodney Rice in that game the other day in Greensboro, what, scored 17 points, I think it was. He led them in scoring. Now they got boat raced. But still, you know, they to have him, and I believe it was his seventh game as a Hokie, given all the injuries of his freshman year, I think the NIT experience could be invaluable. Now, how long that NIT experience will be is a different question, because the Hokies got sent packing and they'll head off to Cincinnati in the first round. But if they could extend through the, you know, advance a couple, three rounds, maybe get to New York, that would be, I think, very beneficial moving forward. And maybe, you know, Hunter Couture and Grant Basile still have another year if they want to use it. Would a strong NIT performance kind of give them more of a positive vibe heading in to what could potentially be for them a final year at Virginia Tech and influence their decision? Or maybe they've already decided to come back. Who knows? But, to me, I think it could be invaluable for the Hokies.
You know who the Hokies could play in the second round of the NIT?
No, I did not parse the bracket. Oh, yes. You mean Lander? Well, no, Lander's not only they get in the first round.
Yeah.
Who is the second round?
It could be Rutgers. That's why. Okay. That's why I
that's
bring
why
it up.
You know.
That's why I'm aware, and nobody else knows who could be down the line in the bracket. But no, it is. Cincinnati is a tough draw. Rutgers, a team that I thought should have been in the NCAA tournament. So this would be some good tests, is my point. Mm-hmm. It's not a throwaway competition. It's not one of these pay for play, buy your way in. Is anybody excited about the NIT? No, of course not. But I think it could be very good and formative for that team. I thought it could have been really good for Carolina's young guys who didn't play, since Carolina leaned so heavily on its returners. The problem is, if your returners aren't going to go, if they don't want to play,
right?
Do you have the bodies? Do you have the physical bodies to practice and play and compete? And the answer is no. So I think that's a big part of certainly why Carolina passed. Now, David, there's another NCAA tournament. That's the women's bracket. And Virginia Tech, they didn't have to settle for anything there. Kenny Brooks' bunch, after winning the ACC, they're a number one seed in the women's NCAA tournament. Kenny's really got that thing rolling.
Man, what, they won 11 in a row? I think that's right. You know, Liz Kittley and Georgia Amor, and no, they've really, really had a heck of a year sitting there as a number one seed. And then if they get to the Sweet 16, it's interesting how the women's tournament is doing it this year. They're going to play only at two sites for the regionals. So you have two regionals at one site and two at another, and those sites are Greenville and Seattle. And the Hokies would advance out to Seattle in an attempt to get to Dallas and the Final Four. But you're sitting there as a number one seed. Why not Virginia Tech?
Yeah.
To the Final Four and beyond.
Yeah. And when you say beyond, think too, this program has been building. So this doesn't feel like a flash in the pan. They got a great player. They had a great year, although certainly Kittley's a great player. It feels like Kenny Brooks has built something there where Virginia Tech is going to be a force to reckon with in the ACC for years to come here. But this year certainly could be special. We actually had the chance to catch up with Whit Babcock, the AD at Virginia Tech, and talked a little bit about that. It's going to be interesting, David, from a fan standpoint, because Tech is hosting the first games.
Yeah,
they're also, you know, going on the road for the NIT. I imagine they're going to get a good turnout at Castle for the women. They've been very popular all year, but the fact that also the men are on the road, not that no one will make the trip, but I would think that the women is going to be a hot ticket and a big draw there in Blacksburg.
Absolutely. No, what, 6,000-7,000? I would not be surprised at all to see that, and it'd be an advantage, and that's the way the women's tournament is structured. So Virginia Tech earned that advantage. Take full advantage of that home court and win yourself a couple games and head out west. And there's another team, Mike, that from the state that's in that women's bracket after rolling through the Sun Belt, and that's James Madison. Now they've got a much tougher path. They got to go out and immediately play a three seed in Ohio State in the first round. But you know, good on the Dukes to roll through the Sun Belt like they did. And I believe it was Texas State they played in the conference tournament final and just ran them out by 20 some.
Yeah, so it's always interesting to me when you look at those brackets and those programs, and you know, everybody still talks about Connecticut and rightfully so. But don't forget that, you know, who built that JMU women's program?
Kenny Brooks.
Right. So Kenny Brooks, you could argue, has two teams in the NCAA tournament. I think we are seeing, certainly undeniably, the growth in the women's game, but starting a real clear emergence of some elite coaches in that next round after certainly we had Pat Summitt and Wendy Larry and Gina Oriyama. I think you're starting to see with what's going on at Louisville for a number of years, now what's going on at Virginia Tech, you're starting to see some elite coaches, and it's going to be a great tournament. Like we said, I think it's going to be a great crowd in Blacksburg, and those women deserve it. It's going to be a lot of fun to keep our eyes on all of that. Hope it was fun for you to listen today. You can subscribe to Teal and Barber on Apple Podcasts or wherever you find your favorite pods, and please consider supporting local journalism with an online subscription to the TD. You can find special promotional offers available at richmond.com. Today's show was produced by Dean Hoffmeyer and yours truly. Teal and Barber is a podcast of the Richmond Times-Dispatch and richmond.com. For David Teal, I'm Mike Barber. Thanks for listening. Be healthy and safe. Good luck with those brackets. And please join David and me again next time.